You're listening to the History Extra podcast from BBC History Magazine. We're the UK's best-selling history magazine, available from all good newsagents or via subscription. Check out our latest subscription deals at historyextra.com/subscribe. The magazine is also now available on many digital devices, including the iPad, iPhone, Kindle, Kindle Fire, Google Play, Kobo and Zinio. Look out for us in your app store or newsstand, or find out more at historyextra.com/digital.
Well, we think we know John, and we think we know John because of the association of John with the tales of Robin Hood. And most of us have been brought up on the Disney representation of Prince John, that sort of rather pathetic lion of the Disney cartoon. And I think that that image of John is something that's imprinted on all of us. It's a very, very powerful image. But of course, that has nothing to do with the real King John.
Welcome to our second podcast of June 2015. I'm Rob Attar, the editor of BBC History Magazine. On Monday the 15th of June, we'll reach the 800th anniversary of Magna Carta, the medieval English charter that has gone on to influence proponents of freedom and democracy around the world ever since. The charter was the result of a civil war in England between a group of barons and King John, who has gone down in history as one of the worst kings the country has ever had. But have we all been unkind to John? To get an up-to-date perspective on him, we've spoken to not one, but two historians who have both written new biographies of him.
Status updates.
Here's what's going viral now on Facebook. Joanna channeling Aretha Franklin. This trending video shows a little girl performing a sassy routine at her dance recital, set to the 1967 song Respect. The Queen of Soul would be proud.
Coming to you direct from the heart of New York City all the way to wherever you are, you're listening to The VIP. Jazzwell Report, welcome ladies and gentlemen. Our guest today has been through one hell of a journey in her life, and she's only 22 years old. Brought up in a Muslim family and having discovered Jesus Christ as a child, you can't even imagine what she and her family went through as she took the lonely road to Christianity. Our guest is Rivka Barry, who's written about her journey and struggles in the new book called Hiding in the Light. Welcome to the show, Rivka. Mummies and daddies, summer is here and so are the kids. No school, no homework, which means for parents like you and me, there's going to be no peace. But children are not things to be molded. Rather, they are people to be unfolded. And a lot of you have requested me to do a show about the best way to manage your children this summer. Some of you have expressed concerns about this whole concept of keeping children busy during the summer break. Well, I hear you. My guest today will share with us what she thinks is the right thing to do and to question what we normally do.
And Emma Skye has been there through the best of times and the worst of times. And sadly, we're back in the worst of times. And she might just know the way out. Emma, welcome to Kilmeade and Friends.
Thank you very much.
Emma, I could not be more impressed with your book, what you've done, what you've accomplished, who you've impressed. But let's start at the beginning. How did you end up in Iraq?
Well, back in 2003, the British government asked for volunteers to go out to Iraq to administer the country for 3 months before we handed the country back to the Iraqis. And I was somebody who was very much against the war, and I thought I could go out there, I could apologize to Iraqis for the war, and I could help them rebuild their country. I'd spent a decade working in Israel-Palestine, so I'd got skills in conflict mediation and institutional development, so I thought I could be some help. So I was one of those volunteers back in 2003. Well, I hadn't really been given any instructions before I left Iraq, before I left the UK. All I was told was, you know, get to Basra, take a British military flight to Basra, and when you arrive, you'll be met by somebody holding a sign with your name on it and taken to the nearest hotel. So it was the British government. I assumed they knew what they were doing. So that's what I did. And when I arrived in Basra, there was nobody to meet me. And I was like, oh, my God. I'm in Iraq now. I've said goodbye to everybody, so I better find myself a job. So I went up to Baghdad. I got a flight up to Baghdad, and I made my way to the Republican Palace, which was the headquarters of the coalition. And I spent about a week there, and they said, oh, no, we're fine here. We need more people in the north, so go north. So I wandered around the country for a bit until I got to Kirkuk. And they said, okay, you are now the senior civilian in Kirkuk, reporting to Ambassador Bremer.
George Weld, author of Breakfast, Recipes to Wake Up For, and owner of Egg Restaurant in Williamsburg, New York, says it's also a good idea to make something ahead of time to supplement the entree, like his mom's baked blueberry treat.
It's great hot out of the oven, but blueberry cake, because there's a lot of juice in the blueberries, it's nice if they've had a little bit of time to reabsorb into the cake. It's actually something that my mother used to make for us in the summers when we would have a lot of blueberries. And she was a good cook, but overwhelmed by children, so she knew she could always throw together and it would turn out delicious no matter what.
What does football mean to you?
Well, football is my life. I work for it. I hope to be in it when I grow up. So I really hope we can find it or raise enough funds.
I hope so, too. If the person who did this or people who did this are out there and they're listening to you right now, Julian, what do you have to say to them?
Bring it back because you're not being good yourself. You're just hurting us.
A new smartphone app could help doctors and would-be parents receiving in vitro fertilization treatment to monitor the growth of embryos in a lab thousands of miles away. The technology involves an incubator for fertilized eggs that uses time-lapse photography to eliminate the potentially hazardous practice of removing the eggs for inspection as they are forming into embryos. As part of a financial agreement, funding would be put toward developing the technology into a live streaming app for doctors and patients so they can monitor the embryos around the clock.
A group of scientists and fishermen in Maine working on a new tool they say will allow people to learn the backstory of fish they may want to buy by scanning a barcode. Gulf of Maine Research Institute and Maine Coast Fishermen's Association are working jointly on the tool, which they say will most likely be a smartphone app. The scientists say the app will allow consumers to learn the name of the fisherman who caught the fish and where it was caught. Gulf of Maine working with Trace Register and Vancouver-based This Fish to make the tool possible, and it will likely initially apply it to seafood labeled through its sustainable seafood verification programs.
Living near a busy road or an airport can multiply the risk of obesity. Research in the British Medical Journal finds that as decibel exposure goes up, inches are added to the waistline. The reason is what noise does to sleep.
Sleep and weight are intimately linked. We know that people who do shift work tend to gain weight. They are more likely to develop something called insulin resistance. And with this comes the tendency to weight gain.
Sleep specialist Dr. Kirsty Anderson, diabetes could also be part of the fallout. The more noise, the less sleep, the greater the stress. The study is considered the first research into the effect of noise pollution on waistlines.
And she continues to look. We've heard that Bill Clinton, the former president, is there. Perhaps daughter Chelsea as well. We will see perhaps later. Dressed in a blue pantsuit with a blue blouse. High wave. Lots of American flags flying in the distance. It is quite a shot as Hillary Clinton, who kicked off her campaign officially about 8 weeks ago, is now doing this to define herself. She officially announced several weeks ago this is really her first full-scale campaign rally, first of what will certainly be a sustained effort to define herself. And it centers on four main elements that we will hear her talk about. Hillary Clinton at the podium, still enjoying the applause.
Winter is coming in Spain. In case you're not familiar with Game of Thrones, that is a reference to the HBO series and its World of the Seven Kingdoms. It was filmed in part in Spain. Fans are flocking there for Game of Thrones-themed tours and looking for echoes of the show in Spanish politics. Lauren Freyer visited the set in Seville.
Welcome to the mythical kingdom of Dorne.
Dorne is the southernmost of the Seven Kingdoms.
That's George R.R. Martin, author of the Game of Thrones books. He may call this Dorne, but in real life, it's Seville. This city's ancient Moorish palace, the Alcazar, is where parts of season 5 were filmed.
It
HBO got unprecedented access to Seville's palace, where they shot for about a month, transforming it into the water gardens where Prince Doran Martel resides, mourning his brother's death.
Your brother was murdered, and you sit here in the water gardens, staring at the sky and doing nothing.
More than 85,000 locals applied to be extras on the Game of Thrones set. Pepe Payares was one of them. He's a tour guide who takes fans through the palace every day.
So when we go to the garden and say, this is the water garden, yes, it's like amazing.
Northern Iraq is dotted with camps full of people who fled Mosul a year ago, never thinking they'd still be here today. In this camp near the city of Erbil, children play around a shipping container. I sit with Abu Hajar, who can't believe it's been so long.
We just think that it's 1 week and we will come back.
Abu Hajar is afraid to use his full name like others in this story. He's heard ISIS blew up his house and took his car because he used to be a policeman.
A green food truck emblazoned with the words Breadstick Nation and Italian Kitchen found a parking spot this weekend on the edge of the Boston neighborhood where Italian food is most sacred.
Would you like chicken parmesan or Italian meatball?
The Olive Garden is jumping on the food truck craze, sending them around the country handing out free samples of their newest menu item, breadstick sandwiches.
Awesome. Huh? Awesome. Really good.
Mark McKenna lives in the North End, surrounded by Italian restaurants that have been here for generations.
After eating this, I would eat lunch at an Olive Garden.
That's what the folks at this truck are hoping to hear. They'd like to bring more people into their 800 restaurants around the country.
Italy says it would like some help with migrants crossing the Mediterranean. For many people fleeing Libya, Italy is the closest destination. The surge of migrants has raised tensions, and Italy is now calling for a big change in European Union policy to allow more migrants to seek asylum in other countries besides Italy. Here's NPR's Silvia Poggioli.
The vast majority of refugees reaching Italy wants to join relatives or find jobs in Northern Europe. But as the migrant tide grows, neighboring Austria and France have suspended free cross-border movement for migrants.
Joyce Mitchell faces up to 8 years behind bars for her alleged role in the plot. Brian Mann of North Country Public Radio has the latest.
Joyce Mitchell hobbled into the Plattsburgh, New York courthouse this morning wearing shackles and zebra-striped prison fatigues. She stared straight ahead and looked somber during the brief appearance. In a sign of just how tense things are here, 10 days after the search began, she was also equipped with a bulky bulletproof vest.
It's a safety precaution that they take in all high-profile cases.
That's Clinton County District Attorney Andrew Wiley speaking outside the courthouse.
Study by Cedars-Sinai researchers found that chemicals in the skins and seeds of red grapes slightly lowered estrogen levels and elevated testosterone levels among premenopausal women who drank 8 ounces of red wine nightly for a month. The findings run counter to the widely held belief that all alcohol consumption increases the risk of breast cancer by raising estrogen levels, which then promote the growth of cancer cells. Researchers studied 36 women who drank either red or white wine for a month. At the end of the 30 days, the women switched varietals for another test period. Blood tests that measured hormone levels indicated that white wine didn't show the same beneficial effects as did red wine. The study will be published in the April print edition of the Journal of Women's Health, but researchers say large-scale studies are still needed before they can definitively determine whether red wine lowers the risk of breast cancer.
What can be said about the red wine study?
I'm thankful for baby number two on the way.
I'm thankful for my new job,
my friends and my family, and being lucky.
I'm very thankful for my family because we lost my grandmother last year around this time, and I'm just glad that everyone else is still around. It makes me more grateful.
My new family, because I never had a family, and now I have one.
What are the people expressing?
Police Department spokesman Captain John Cooney said Officer Michael Johnson was being treated at a hospital last night for non-life-threatening injuries. He says Johnson, who's been on the force for fewer than 10 years, also suffered facial and head cuts. Cooney told the Times Union that Johnson was patrolling near the Martin Luther King apartments at about 10:30 last night when he got into a chase and then a confrontation with a suspect. Initial reports were of shots fired and an officer down, but Cooney says it now appears that it was Johnson who discharged his weapon. It was not immediately known if the suspect, who remains at large, was hit.
What occurred to the officer?
Job growth will be one of the top issues. An initiative called Startup America is aiming to fuel job growth through entrepreneurship. So we are joined here today by Startup America CEO Scott Case. So thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I just want to talk a little bit before we get into it about Startup America and what it actually is and what you guys kind of represent.
Well, we're all about startups, and the whole idea behind Startup America is how can we raise America's startup and entrepreneurial game to the next level. A lot of the rest of the world is catching up, and we need to step our game to the next level. And so that's really about focusing on how can we help American startups grow, because their growth is what will fuel job creation. It's only through startups that grow that we have a real new creation of net new jobs. In fact, over the last 30 years, all the net new jobs were created by companies less than 5 years old. So that's what we're focusing on, is how can we help these startups from all around the country, help them fuel their growth, and ultimately drive the economy forward.
What can be inferred about Startup America?
What do we want?
Human rights!
What do we want?
Now!
Generally, we're here to make a point that, yeah, Mr. President, we don't appreciate you signing that law into effect. We don't appreciate you basically stripping even American citizens of constitutional rights. And we're here to basically to express our opinion.
We're here to shut down Guantanamo Bay. We'd like to see the President, Congress, shut down Guantanamo Bay prison. 10 years of having this prison open is just 10 years too many. It's a very bad symbol to the rest of the world.
What are the protesters demanding?
The key to setting effective goals is following five basic rules. First, goals must be specific. This means exact, clear, precise, and unambiguous. Next, goals must be time-bound. The act of defining when creates urgency. Urgency forces action, harnessing your desire, removing complacency, and overcoming procrastination. Goals must be attainable. While it's important to shoot for the stars and ignore the limits, if too many of your goals are long shots, you'll end up becoming frustrated. Getting regular wins helps you stay motivated and on track. Next, goals have steps of success. Big goals are always achieved through a series of small, measurable steps, and these steps of success, your plan, must be defined and written down if you want your big dreams to come true. And finally, goals must be written down. A written goal is a powerful force. It constantly tugs at you, pulling and pushing you towards your destination. It is there, it's written in stone, and it cannot be ignored until it has been reached.
Which sentence best summarizes the conversation?
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 2 of Phil Rossi's Fiction in 5. I wasn't going to do an introduction, but then I found out that my buddy Brent Weichsel, who you might know the name from the Thieves Lullaby music video, he was the director and creator behind that. So, you know, he's done a lot of work for me out of the kindness of his heart. And so I want to return the favor, and I want to tell you to go check out his Ancestor video on YouTube. He put together a fan video for Scott Sigler's Ancestor trailer contest, and just want you to go out there, check out the video, tell Brent how much you dig it, and help him win this contest.
What is the man advertising?
How was it then? I've heard it went down a storm.
Yes, it did. Our client was so impressed. He's already indicated they'll be placing more orders as of today.
That's fantastic. You must be really pleased.
Not to mention relieved. Actually, over the moon would be nearer the mark, especially with my pay review just around the corner. My appraisal is next week, so it couldn't have come at a better time.
That's true. You'll probably be in line for a pay rise, you lucky thing.
What does the woman hope to gain from the business deal?
So do you think there's anything else that you buy that you go for a particular brand?
When I was doing things in my new kitchen and I wanted some new appliances, you know, I knew of the name Braun being quite reliable, so I've got a few things by Braun. And Morphy Richards is also quite well known.
How do you think those names become famous? Do you think it's through advertising, or do you think it's like with your sister in the shoes, it's what other people buy and you're influenced by that?
Well, I would imagine it's probably a combination of that sort of thing. And also, like not just my sister, but friends who might say, oh, I've just bought this and it works really well. And so you keep that in your mind when you're out shopping and you say, oh, that's the one that Jackie's got, or that's the one that Lynn's got, you know, and they've raved about it. And so you think, well, that's a good recommendation.
How are we influenced to buy?
You mentioned earlier about being driven. Has your career become an all-consuming thing?
Oh, it's that's all it's ever been. Yeah, it's not been a healthy thing, Mark. No, it's not been that healthy at all. It's only now that I'm in the last few years I'm sort of a little bit more chilled out and interested in other things. And you know, for the longest time, especially when you're driven, you find it very difficult to live in the present. You know, we're always looking towards the future. We've got to do this. We've got to get on the phone. We've got to hustle this gig and, you know, meet that guy and get this record deal and get that record out. And we forget to live in the moment. And, you know, before you know it, 10 years have gone by and you haven't enjoyed life. And I found that for this success was so important to me, that actually happened to me for a long time. And now I find moments like this much more enjoyable than getting on the phone trying to get a gig. I mean, I actually want to put that stuff off now.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's important more than ever, but being present is quite important to me.
Yeah.
What is the speaker's definition of his career?
Damian Grammaticus reports.
President Obama has made pursuing a world free of nuclear weapons one of his personal priorities. The vision helped him win the Nobel Peace Prize 3 years ago. Now, speaking in Seoul, he said he wanted to talk to Russia about further cuts to the thousands of warheads both nations still possess. And Mr. Obama said America will not allow more and more regimes to possess the world's most deadly weapons. So he had direct messages for North Korea and Iran. North Korea's leaders, he said, could choose nuclear weapons and isolation or pursue peace. And Iran's leaders, poised to enter talks with the international community, he said, have the possibility of a diplomatic resolution before them, but time is short.
What made President Obama win the Nobel Peace Prize 3 years ago?
David Loyne explains.
Olympic gold medals were awarded in 1924 to every member of a 1922 attempt on Everest. Although the climbers had not reached the top, they came closer than anyone had before, an extraordinary achievement given the clothing and equipment available to them. One of the medal winners, Colonel Edward Strutt, made a promise that an Olympic gold medal would be taken to the peak. When Kenton Cool, who's already climbed Everest 9 times, heard that the promise had never been kept, he tracked down one of the medals and is hoping to reach the peak carrying the medal before the London Olympic Games, honouring that 88-year-old promise. By the time the medals were awarded in 1924, one of the climbers from that 1922 expedition, George Mallory, had already died trying once again to reach the summit of the world. It would be more than 30 years before it was conquered.
What was the promise Colonel Strutt made?
Trailer.
It shows the firing of the taser. Was Hernandez Rojas, as the police statement suggests, combative when he was killed, or was he on the ground and handcuffed?
Hernandez had lived in the U.S. for 2 decades when he was deported in May of 2010. The San Diego coroner ruled his death a homicide, and the U.S. Justice Department took over the investigation. But there's been silence ever since. Cristian Ramirez is one of the activists who's been calling for justice in the case. He says the entire video lasts several minutes and shows agents kicking and tasing a helpless Hernandez multiple times.
Knowing that that had been the testimony of eyewitnesses from the very beginning, and knowing that from the very beginning Border Patrol had tried to justify this brutal beating, was very upsetting because this man was tortured to death.
A Border Patrol spokeswoman said she could not comment on the video because the Justice Department is still investigating.
What happened to Hernandez Rojas?
The Dalai Lama, the spiritual leader of Tibetan Buddhism, says the seeds of human compassion and gentleness are planted early.
We entirely depend on others' affection, mainly mother's affection, mother's care, and mother's milk.
He says more effort is needed to create harmony among religions.
Religions, not only in the past, but even today, sometimes causing divisions or even conflict.
Individual oneness with all human beings, he said, will lead to less cheating, bullying, and killing. Van Nguyen said she traveled to Long Beach from the Bay Area to hear that message.
Try to understand why things are the way they are, to love somebody who hurts you and forgive them. Trying to understand why human are mean to human beings.
The Dalai Lama has retired as political leader for the Tibetan people. State Senator Lu Correa gave the Dalai Lama a commendation for his work toward world peace.
What will individual oneness lead to?
The study comes from the Committee of 100. That's a nonpartisan group of Chinese-American leaders founded by architect I.M. Pei 30 years ago. 4,000 people in China and 1,400 Americans took part. They seem to have one major thing in common. More than half the Americans questioned said China cannot be trusted, and an equal number of Chinese say the same thing about the U.S. Distrust can often come from poor information, and in both nations, more than 50% say the other country's media doesn't show an accurate picture of its counterpart. Even so, a majority of both peoples believe the relationship between China and the U.S. is the most important partnership in the world. And while there are concerns about intellectual property, deficits, and corruption, both sides agree trade ties benefit everyone.
What can be concluded from the survey?
You've said that the church is not that important to you. Was there a specific point at which you sort of lost your religion and decided that really it didn't have much to offer?
Well, I'm brought up by Jesuits who were very clever men. So my mother always said it was the Jesuits' fault that I didn't believe because they made me think. And you see, that's the point. The gift of faith is that at some point you stop thinking. You say, okay, I accept this. And I accept this gift of faith. And it's a wonderful gift. It's a great consolation to everybody. I've never had that gift. Well, I had, of course, for a while. But I'd always questioned it, really. I personally believe in people. I suppose you could call a humanist. I don't know. But I'd rather think that we're born good rather than evil. I've never accepted the concept of original sin.
What does the person being interviewed believe in?
Tony Ryan, can you tell us how the macromolecules are created in the laboratory?
My favourite example is the first one I ever saw.
What do you mean by saw? You've told me we couldn't see it.
No, the first polymerization I ever saw.
Right.
So the first time I saw polymers being made, I was 12 or 13. And the school teacher did an experiment in the chemistry class. And they had an oil with one of the monomers in and water with the other monomer in. And mixed the two monomers together, mixed the two liquids together so very carefully, so that there was a thin layer between them. And the polymer formed at the interface. So an acid reacted with an amide at the interface to make the bond.
When Tony Ryan first saw polymers being made, where was he?
And I wanted to front a big series like that, which I felt was going to be intelligent. There's lots of thrills in it, but the thing about the Doctor is he's very inclusive. He doesn't see the alien in aliens, and I loved that about him. And also the fact that he's never at home. He's a Time Lord, and he's always, always falling through the universe. And when I thought about that, I thought I could play that. There's a kind of a loneliness to him, as well as all the charm and the wit.
And, you're the guy who did the one series.
Yep.
Do you wish ever that you'd done more?
No. My intention was to make that show a success so the next few series could follow.
What did the Doctor character have in addition to charm and wit?
Well, it is a long selection process for the reserve SAS. It runs over 11 months.
Right.
And, you know, we had about 150 of us start and I think four of us pass at the end. You're going to be broken and exhausted and wet and cold and drained. And it's a process of attrition where you're covering huge distances across the mountains, carrying very heavy weights.
Typically, huge distance would be what?
You know, you would do up to like 55, 60 kilometres, you know. But you're talking the weight of a small child on your back, you know, through waist-deep snow. That would run over, you know, one or two days. And it is relentless, but selection test spirit, the process is designed like that, and what they want is that the people who in those moments can give more than they're asked to, can dig deep, find that little bit extra and push on.
How is the weight of a bag during SAS training described?
So I know you don't draw this conclusion yourself, but in terms of the numbers,
yes.
It has been argued that we only see the 20th century as so incredibly violent because there were many, many more of us around to be killed. But if you look at it in proportional terms, it doesn't stand out particularly.
That's true, and I'm not even sure it stands out particularly in pure numbers. Second World War was the deadliest human event in history, and but again, Genghis Khan was second. He was from the 1200s. And
you make the point, 95% of the deaths,
yes,
in the 20th century were from natural causes.
Yes.
What were most of the deaths in the 20th century caused by?